In Nehemiah chapter 4, Nehemiah chapter 4, Nehemiah chapter 4, I'll read the first two verses. Nehemiah is a harder book to find. It's best to probably get close to Psalms, come back, Job, Esther, and Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 4, beginning with verse 1. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we built the wall, he was angry and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spoke before his brethren in the army of Samaria and said, five questions he asked. What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? Revival is a word that has just about deteriorated in our church society today. I was somewhat perplexed when I talked to several preachers. I talked to one well-known preacher. He told me his denomination no longer has revivals. He said, I seldom book a revival because they don't have revivals. Usually just Sunday services. A lot of denominations have stopped holding what we call revivals. A prominent preacher here a while back I was privileged to talk to, and I knew that he has an exceptional congregation in size. And I asked him, I said, why don't you have revivals anymore? And he said something in all honesty. He said, well, two things we never have at our church. He said, first of all, we never have a retreat. Never have a retreat. He said the word retreat means to go back, and the church is not to go back. The church is to move forward. So he, of course, was referring to the fact that he didn't like the negative connotation. Then he said, the other thing is, if I am to say we're to have revival, that is to say that my church is dead. Because to revive means to bring to life. And he said, therefore, I don't like the word revival, so they do what most churches do now. They have conferences, they have seminars, and a number of other things. Anything except revival. Well, I wanted to say, just because you don't call a corpse doesn't mean it's not a corpse. See, that's what we're doing. We're fooling ourselves. We say that everything's all right, and we say that we're fine and that we don't need anything and that everything's going along all right. When in reality, there are times in every believer under my voice, every one of us, there are times where that we'll feel cold, we'll feel indifferent, we'll feel somewhat spiritually drained and feel like everything is going out of us, and we do need revival. There needs to be a reviving. I would venture to say there are people right here this morning that you put it any way you want to put it, but your shout has gone out. Your desire is long gone. You are living a defeated life. You're hanging on by your fingernails, wondering how much longer I can hang in there, how much longer I can make it. And you can try to salve it all you want to and try to overlook it all you want to, but it doesn't change the fact that God is a God of revival. And sometimes God comes along and breathes fresh air into us and revives us or resuscitates us when the world and the cares of life and everything around us seems to drain us. We do need a revival. Here in this particular occasion, we know that Nehemiah served King Artaxerxes, and he was a prominent king. He could tell by looking at Nehemiah's face that something was wrong. He could tell he was distraught. He could tell he was upset. And then finally, by the expression on his face, the king asked him, what's wrong? Why are you wroth? Why are you disappointed? And he began to tell him what had happened. His people in his country had been overthrown. The enemy had tore down the city. They had burned the walls. They had abused the women. They had mutilated the men. And the city was absolutely in disrepair. And he said all the fond memories that he had been destroyed. Zion lay in waste and Jerusalem was absolutely overthrown. And he had a desire to see the walls built back again. Well, Artaxerxes said, I tell you what we'll do. I'll help fund that. And he funded a project to send him back to start on the work and to encourage the people to keep going in the work that had started, to rebuild the walls of the city again and to try to revive the city and build it back up. When he gets there, he runs into a number of individuals. I'm only looking at one this morning, and that's Sambalot. Sambalot is a perfect picture of our enemy, the devil. Now, he was a warrior, but he was defeating them not with weapons. He was defeating them with words. He knew that if he got close enough for them to hear the words that he was saying, that those words would penetrate them and leave them in absolute ruin and take the desire away from them to be revived. Do you know something? The devil always knows what to say, and he'll always make sure he gets close enough for you to hear what he's saying. He knows if he says the right thing and does the right thing, that he will absolutely stop you in your tracks. He knows how to take individuals, innocent individuals sometimes, and those same individuals will speak words to you that for some reason they become a deterrent to you to having the revival that you need inside your heart. He is out to stop every one of us if he possibly can. Inevitably, when people leave this church that have been taught right and know right, and when they know the right direction, inevitably, when they leave this church and become worldly, the first thing that they do, I don't understand this. They can't wait to get away from us. But then they won't quit talking about us when they leave. If we're that bad, why do you want to talk about us when you're gone? If you pursue what's right and you're following the will of God, why do you want to destroy us when you're gone? And he'll always make sure that we hear those things. He'll get close enough to us until he knows that will preoccupy our mind and stop us from moving forward and doing what's right. He gets close enough and they're working and they're trying to rebuild. And the first thing he says, the first question that he asks, what do these feeble Jews? He says, don't they know that I know how weak they are and how tired they are and they've been absolutely destroyed? I know their weakness. They're feeble. If you make your mind up this morning to get back on track with God and start praying the way you ought to pray, reading your Bible the way you ought to read your Bible, praying for the fire of God to come back in your life, the first thing the devil will do is tell you, but wait just a minute. I know your weakness. I know how feeble you are. I know how weak you are. And he'll bring those weaknesses up to you over and over and over again. It may not even be something spiritual. It may be something physical. But he knows your weakness. And he'll strap you with that weakness and do everything that he can to try to tie you down. If you think that I'm kidding with you this morning, you just stop and think. Have you ever noticed how folks always feel worse right before church? Now, for some reason, they always feel good enough to go to work by Monday morning. But they feel terrible at church time. They're looking in the mirror telling themselves, oh boy, I look terrible. What's different than any other day? Come to church. He will make sure that you feel your worst right before God is ready to do His best.
And He sees your weakness and He'll pray on that and tell you how feeble you are, how frail you are. And He'll remind you of all of your weaknesses, all of your inabilities. But the truth of the matter is, it is not our power. It is the power of God that makes the difference. And when God shows up in the fullness of His power, it doesn't matter how unqualified we are, how unable we are, how weak we are. When God shows up, it will always make the difference.
What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Look at you now. You're trying to prop yourself up and you're trying to rebuild yourself. Some of you have stumbled into this church and you've gone through a stage where that spiritually you were drained and you were dead, and now you're trying to fortify yourself. You're trying to do the things that you know you ought to do. You're trying to go to church and you're trying to pray. You're trying to do right and you're trying to invite others. And He says, all of that, look at yourself. You're no better off. You go to church all the time. You're no better off. Well, look out there at the people in the world. Look out there at so-and-so. He's a Christian. But look at all the money he's made. He's on the golf course this morning. That's where you ought to be. He's done all right. God's punishing you. Don't you see? Doing all those right things don't matter. I've got news for you. Doing right things does matter. When does it matter? I tell you when it matters. At the end of life, when you get ready to meet God and you look back across your life, and instead of having a life that's filled with regrets, saying, I wish I'd have done this, I wish I'd have done that, you can say, Lord, I've done my best to hold to your unchanging hand. I've walked every step of life with you. And Lord, I know you'll be with me here at the end of my life as well. I don't care what the devil tells you. Just keep laying one brick on top of another and keep rebuilding your life, because God has a purpose and a plan. And yes, God will take things that seem ruined and build them up again for His glory. Don't try to fortify yourself. Don't try to do better. All that you do, it won't matter anyway. It does matter. Then he said, will they sacrifice? You'll never have a revival in your life until you sacrifice. Somehow we got in the frame of mind where that we preach obedience is better than sacrifice. That's true. But that doesn't mean that God doesn't want any sacrifice from you. In fact, Paul said you're to present your bodies a living sacrifice. There's sometimes you have to sacrifice some things for the good of God. Yes, you have to inconvenience yourself. You have to put yourself and your desires out of the way to do what God wants. Because there are times in our life where we have to make sacrifices for God. And when we sacrifice anything for God, God will bless us for it. There's times that it's difficult that you have to put some of the desires you have on the back burner to keep the desires of God on the front burner. But when you sacrifice, God will always bless you. I don't care what you're doing. When you sacrifice for God, God will bless you. Preacher told me this week, he said, what you need to do, you need to slow down. I said, I'm afraid we've got too many of them slowed down already. Somebody has to pay some kind of a price. How are we going to turn this world around if the only sacrifice we offer to God is come when I want, do what I want, when I want, the way I want? Sometimes you have to crucify your wants and say that God's desire is the most important thing. Sacrifice. Then he said, will they make an end in a day? They really think they can build this back in a day? I've said it from this pulpit before and I'll say it again this morning. What it takes the devil years to tear down, God can put back in a short period of time. The devil's destroyed lives through the ages now. Lives that he thought would never build up and lives that he thought would never be used again. But God said, I'm not through with that life. What it takes the enemy years to tear apart, God can bring back together with one spoken word. God can reinforce it and build it back. And when God does it, He does a good work, and He'll continue to perform that work until He calls us home. And God will not stop working on us. He'll keep going and going and going and going until He makes us what He wants us to be. They used to sing that song, God's Still Working on Me. You didn't come to the altar and get saved, and God said, there, I'm through with you now. There's a lot of things you have to work on. Keep working on. But the day will come when God will call and we will leave. And at the end, we'll be glad that we're following Him. And then He said, will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish? Well, that question at first seems strange. You know, I used to wonder about this. Now, you help me out on this. Every city that they overthrew, just about every time in the Old Testament, when they would overthrow the city, tear the walls down, they would burn the stones. How many of y'all know rocks don't burn? Why did they do that? I mean, doesn't that seem like a futile thing to do? Were they doing it to make a statement? No, I think there was more to it than that. Why would they always burn the stones? In fact, they were so used to doing that that if you remember in Titus, when Titus came in 70 AD and overthrew the temple had a large amount of gold in it, precious silvers, and before Titus, the general, came in, after that they had seized the temple, they were so used to burning the stones that they set the temple on fire. And the precious metals melted, ran down in the cracks because on the temple they weren't allowed to use mortar. They didn't use mortar on the temple, stone upon stone. And it ran in and filled the cracks. So when Titus got there, he was angry, according to history, and told them, in fact, he fulfilled the prophecy that Jesus spoke about when he said there wouldn't be a stone left on another stone. He made them pry the stones apart and take the precious silver and precious gold back off of it because it had melted down between the stones. So he had them completely tear it down so that they could get the precious metals back out of it. They were so used to burning the walled cities and burning the buildings, even though they were stone, they would burn them. With intense heat, they would burn them. You know why they would burn them like that? They knew that they couldn't rebuild. As strong as they were before if they burnt the stone. My dad worked for 25 years for a cement corporation. And any of you that work down at the coke plant, you know what I'm about to tell you is accurate. There's a firing process that takes place. In cement, as I understand it, they use the same kind of stone that's all over the Holy Land. It is a limestone. And what they did was they called it, they would clinker the stone. They had a big tumbler that they would heat up these furnaces and run that through. A conveyor would feed that in. And then it would tumble that rock in that intense heat. And then after that, it would run through. The rock would look the same. No change. It might change color. Might have a burnt appearance. But the limestone basically looked the same until they put it through the crusher. You could not crush limestone that had not been burnt, clinkered. It had to go through intense fire because once that the fire is put on the limestone, then suddenly any amount of weight that's on it, it just explodes and turns to powder. Hence, cement. Cement is made out of crushed limestone that's been through the fire. It's the main ingredient. You all aren't getting this, are you? They were laughing at them because they said once the stones are built, what would happen is they would start to rebuild. And if they'd been in a fire, they knew that when those rocks reached a certain amount of pressure, they would explode. So they lay the walls up, get halfway up with it, and boom, the foundation would blow out. They try to lay it up again, it would explode and blow out again. Because they knew that stones that had been through a fire could not revive a building or build the building back up again. Don't you know that the devil's number one tactic against the church and against the world today is to put you through so much fire and put so much heat in your life that even if you make your mind up to rebuild something for the glory of God, he'll make sure that when you get up so far with it that it cannot stand the heat and it could not stand the fire, it looks like it always looked. But when you get up so high, it crushes under the pressure. Have you ever seen so many lives that are so crushed as in the world we're living in today? People just simply cannot take any pressure whatsoever. And what he's saying is, go ahead and try to rebuild it. Go ahead and put the stones back up. I know the stones have been through fire and that you can't rebuild anything like that. But they didn't listen to him and they just kept building anyway because they knew the God that had carved out this world, they knew that same God could fortify those stones and raise up a city unto himself, and they just kept building and building because they were determined to revive what the enemy had torn down. He loves to bring things into our lives that will keep us from ever building it back the way it used to be. It's what he's after. It's what he wants. He'll tell you, you can't build anything. No need to even try. He'll tell those of you that's lost, there's nothing good in you for God to build with. So it is a waste of your time to even come and pray and seek God. But see, the enemy only sees it from his point of view. He cannot see it from God's point of view. There's fires in life, real fires in life. There's real trials in life. There's real troubles in life. But I say this with a passionate heart today. If we don't have a revival come to this country soon and start building something back, and it may not look like it used to look, and it may not even be as strong as what it used to be, but if somebody don't start trying to build something back, our nation is plunging headlong in a collision course. And what is happening? And for the life of me, I don't understand it. The church is choosing to go to the world to get new rocks to build with. But I'm here to tell you, I'd rather build on those of you that even though you've been through the fire, and the devil tells you it'll never be the same that it used to be, I'd rather build with what God has put in you than anything the world has to offer you. We need revival. This nation now has more bartenders than preachers. We need revival. We're in trouble in this country. A lot of you, I know, when you look at your life, you say, well, I'm doing good. I'm in church. Some of you, nobody else wants to tell you, so I guess I better go ahead and tell you. I don't care if I am negative. You need revival. You haven't had a blessing from God in months and months and months. You're hanging on. You don't know you're going to make it. God can help you. God can revive you. God can use you. Right now you're going through the heat of it and you're saying, what I've got, God can't use. But God can still build on fires that have come through your life and build something for His glory. But you can't listen to the enemy. The devil will tell you you can't build on that. But you have to just keep working. You have to keep sacrificing. You have to say, Lord, You know my weakness. You know how feeble I am, but You've chosen to use me anyway. And you keep working. And you lay one stone on another. And one stone on another. And one stone on another. We need revival. We need revival. Your heads are bowed, your eyes are closed, they're getting ready to come and sing.